We've got several fires burning on the north slope and all in limited suppression areas. That's just an indication of how dry it is up there.
Just ahead of the holiday weekend, wildfires continue burning across Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 30th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, disability advocates ask Senator Murkowski to vote against changes to the Affordable Health Care Act.
We believe this bill really isn't something that needs to be amended or changed. It just needs to be thrown out.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Southeast offers the Finnish College Alaska initiative, designed with flexible online learning options and customized degree programs. It's college that fits life, work, and play schedules while earning a degree. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver for eligible applicants. Apply for the fall semester by Tuesday, August the 1st. Learn more at finnishcollege.alaska.edu. This message is sponsored by UAS.
As part of a national sit-in Wednesday to protest the Senate health care bill, a group of Fairbanks residents with disabilities met outside Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's local office. KUAC's Robert Hannon reports.
Doug Tolley is Advocacy Director for Access Alaska in Fairbanks. The nonprofit agency helps those with disabilities achieve greater independence and control over their lives. He also suffers from multiple sclerosis. He was one of dozens of people who showed up at Senator Murkowski's office Wednesday to protest the Better Care Reconciliation Act.
It cuts taxes for the wealthy and reduces the deficit, basically on the backs of using funds that were at one point used for supporting individuals with disabilities.
Tolley says the protesters achieved a cordial reception at the senator's office in Fairbanks. Their concerns were noted. But that polite reception didn't comfort him. He says he's worried by Murkowski's ambivalent reception to the bill.
We would like her to come out as a no, for one thing, as a model for her Republican colleagues. We believe this bill really isn't something that needs to be amended or changed. It just needs to be thrown out.
Karina Peterson is Senator Murkowski's communication director. She says the bill was only released last week, and it will take time for Senator Murkowski to sift through the details.
She doesn't have enough data and analysis about how the bill will impact Alaskans to make a decision on how she will vote on the bill.
Peterson says Murkowski has heard from many people about the health care plan, not all of them from Alaska. She says national ads have targeted Alaska's senior senator as a pivotal vote on the bill's success or failure. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Governor Bill Walker participated in a White House meeting on energy issues this week. Walker was one of four governors invited to discuss energy opportunities in their respective states. U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry and Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt joined Walker and the governors of Iowa, Maine, and Nebraska for the meeting. Walker has long touted the potential for a major natural gas pipeline project in Alaska, seeing it as a way to bolster the economic fortunes of a state that's largely reliant on oil. State officials have expressed hope for working with President Donald Trump's administration on resource development and land access issues. The state often was at odds with former President Barack Obama's administration on those very same matters. A wildfire north of Delta Junction has reignited. The more than 8,000-acre South Fork Sulcha Fire was started by lightning earlier this month in a remote area about 70 miles southeast of Fairbanks. It's been allowed to burn and had been subdued by rain earlier this month before jumping back to life in drier conditions this week. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says there are still pockets of unburned trees in the fire area.
Yesterday, we flew the fire and see it burning in a 100-acre or so patch of black spruce, and it did put up some smoke, and the wind was such that, southeast winds, Fairbanks caught a little whiff of smoke yesterday, and depending on the weather, if the weather conditions and the wind direction stays the same, that could be common here over the next few days if we don't get rain.
Mary says recent warm, dry weather has made for wildfire-prone conditions across eastern parts of the state.
Especially up north. We've got several fires burning on the north slope, all in limited suppression areas, but that's just an indication of how dry it is up there.
The Alaska Interagency Coordination Center reported 3 new fires in the eastern portion of the state Thursday, including blazes in the Yukon-Charley Rivers National Preserve and in the Yukon Flats, as well as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. A 6,000-acre blaze in the Arctic Refuge is getting attention from firefighters who are working to protect cabins and native land allotments in the area. The University of Alaska's Board of Regents unanimously agreed on a budget Tuesday, a week after the legislature decided to reduce the university funding by about $8 million. That cut comes with a $3 million increase in the university's costs. To absorb its share, the University of Alaska Southeast is selling property and sweet-talking potential donors. KTOO's Quentin Chandler reports.
The University of Alaska's funding isn't settled yet. Governor Bill Walker could still make adjustments with his veto power, and on the other hand, the legislature hasn't passed a capital budget. Rick Caulfield, chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast, says the capital budget could bring more money.
And so we're waiting not only on the operating side, which is governor's signature, but also on the capital budget.
Caulfield says UAS will lose $400,000 to $600,000 under the current plan.
It's very likely that we're looking at probably an additional 6 or 8 positions going away. Again, we try to do that through attrition, but in a couple of cases, it's been a matter of a layoff.
Attrition is cutting positions by not filling them when someone quits, retires, or gets fired. Last year, he says UAS cut 32 positions. He says this time they'll only lose 1 faculty person. The cuts also mean fewer resources for things like marketing, advising, and financial aid. This is the 4th budget year in a row that the University of Alaska has taken cuts, and they're adding up.
About 20 to 21% reduction in University of Alaska Southeast general fund dollars. So it's been a real struggle to try to maintain academic quality, even as we're dealing with those kinds of budget cuts.
Caulfield isn't happy about this year's cuts, but he knows it could be worse. Originally, the Senate proposed cutting close to $22 million.
So an element of relief there. Inevitably, we're still having to deal with the cuts. But to the extent that having a budget in hand now minimizes disruption, one of my big concerns is that we want students to know they can still get a quality education at the University of Alaska.
According to a university news release, the budget also sets aside $6 million for a few select areas. Chancellor Caulfield says the money is going toward things like academic research, improving office efficiencies, driving up enrollment, and improving retention. He says the university also wants to increase the number of students pursuing high-demand jobs like nursing and teaching. He says that every dollar put into research tends to bring about $4 in outside investment, and research improves knowledge on issues like climate change and fisheries. To help make up what UAS will lose, Caulfield is looking for more money.
Many people will be familiar with our administrative services and bookstore building, which is the old Hortons Hardware building for those who've been around for a while in Auk Bay. And we put that on the market, and I believe we have a buyer for that building.
The school also recently sold a house previously donated by Alaska's first female attorney general, Grace Scheibel. Scheibel passed away earlier this month. Caulfield says the house sold for about $439,000, and UAS put the money into an academic endowment. Caulfield is also drumming up support from past donors, and he's asking UAS alumni to help out their alma mater.
Just a few days ago, I was in Seattle, and we were visiting with people who've already been generous in providing scholarship support for students at UAS. And we were having, you know, meetings with them and encouraging them to remain engaged.
He says private donations are a modest part of UAS's budget, partly because the school is young and has a smaller pool of potential donors. But Caulfield hopes that one day, those private dollars will help shore up his budget, especially if the cuts continue. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, some Bering Sea killer whales wait for fishermen to bring them their prey.
It started with black cod, and now it's spread also to halibut out in, you know, the eastern Aleutians.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Pacific University offers graduate programs that deliver a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules to support personal goals. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
24 Wrangell municipal workers walked the picket line after voting to go on strike last week. About 35 managers and non-union staff continue to work. The borough says water, sewer, and electric systems will continue to operate, barring a major breakdown. Union leader Jay Rhodes says they're protesting the Wrangell Assembly's decision to implement contract terms the workers rejected. The main sticking point is wages. The borough offered a 75-cent an hour increase. Rhodes says the union wants 250.
This is a negotiation that's been going on since 2014, so for 3 years, and they haven't had a cost of living increase since 2011. So you can imagine the frustration from the bargaining unit side.
The union says municipal managers, school district employees, and private sector workers have seen larger increases in recent years. The Wrangell Borough Assembly voted Tuesday to put management's contract terms into place. Dave Reeves, another union leader, says that was the last straw.
The workers voted on the city's last best offer, which they found unacceptable, and it was the borough assembly's vote to implement their last best offer that basically left the employees no choice but to strike.
Members authorized strikes twice before this year, but dropped plans when negotiations resumed. Union officials say the higher wage increase would balance out health insurance premium hikes. Borough officials were not immediately available for comment. Wrangell has been advertising for temporary workers to fill in during the strike. There's no word yet whether any are on the job. The battle between killer whales and longline fishermen has been going on for decades in the Bering Sea. Pods of whales will follow boats and pick fish off their lines as they pull them in. Some commercial fishermen say the whales have become so persistent that it's left them with no choice but to change their fishing grounds. But regulators may have a solution. KBBI's Aaron Bolton explains.
When Todd Hoppe, a Homer-based commercial fisherman, targets halibut in the Bering Sea, he never sets foot on deck. He sits on top of his boat with binoculars on the lookout for killer whales. If whales close in as his crew pulls in the gear, Hoppy will tell them to cut the line, sending it back to the bottom in hopes of preventing the pod from devouring his catch.
We usually run real short strings so that we can rip it up, you know, pull it up real fast and get it in before they catch up to me.
Hoppy ties a buoy to the other side of the line, so he can return later to pull it in. He sets off towards his next gear set, 40 to 50 miles away. He sets lines far apart, hoping the whales get bored or distracted. But these days, the old tricks aren't working. Traveling further between gear sets or drifting for hours to deter whales burns time and fuel. That's led Hoppy to end his 23-year stint fishing for halibut near Dutch Harbor.
I got rid of all that stuff this year. I don't fish out there anymore. They won.
Currently, he's on his boat tendering in Upper Cook Inlet. He still longlines for some sablefish, also known as black cod, but he shifted his fishing grounds into the Gulf of Alaska, where he can use longline pots. So far, the whales haven't been able to figure them out. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which regulates halibut and groundfish in the Bering Sea, Gulf of Alaska, and the Aleutians, created a black cod fishery in the Gulf this year to feel out how pot fishing might work in the Bering Sea.
So at this point, no one's targeting halibut in the Gulf with pots. It's incidental catch to the black cod pots. And in the Bering Sea, we're going to look at either the incidental retention of halibut or actually to target them. And that'll be a slight difference from the Gulf.
Buck Lakaitis is one of five Alaskan representatives that sit on the council. The federal regulatory body passed a motion earlier this month to examine the potential regulation shift in the Bering Sea. But those changes won't be coming anytime soon.
And we'll take a hard look at it, and we'll see what regulations need to be changed and do it with public input, of course, and we'll, you know, see where it leads. But it usually it takes at least a year, even on the easy ones. And I'm not sure this is an easy one.
The council also agreed research on the issue needs to be done, but who will conduct that research isn't clear just yet. Recent studies show the depredation of black cod has increased over the past decade, But Lakaitis explains the council also wants numbers on halibut, marine mammal scientist and executive director of the North Gulf Oceanic Society, Craig Matkin, has studied killer whales' interactions with fisheries and their populations along the Aleutian chain for decades.
Killer whales have gradually gotten more and more attuned to taking fish off long lines. It started with black cod, and now it's spread also to halibut out in, you know, the eastern Aleutians.
Matkin explains once whales are able to pick fish off a boat's line, that boat is marked. They can identify a vessel just by the sound of its propeller, and they'll remember which ones are easy picking. Fishermen could mitigate the issue by sending gear back to the bottom as soon as they see a whale. But Matkin acknowledges preventing an easy meal isn't always possible.
And I don't think research is going to necessarily find an easy way out of this. You wonder why it's so easy for them to train whales at SeaWorld. Food is powerful stuff.
Matkin thinks regulators are moving in the right direction, and the council will take up the issue again at its next meeting in October. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Earlier this morning, a Juneau liquor store got an unexpected customer. About 8:30 a.m., a clerk at the Liquor Barrel posted a video of a black bear walking through the Lemon Creek store's front door. At first glance, Roger Thibodeau, the clerk, says it looked like a dog coming into the store. But then he saw the snout. Thibodeau described the bear as a cinnamon-colored juvenile, about the size of an adult Malamute dog. In the video, the bear can be seen walking in the open front door, looking at the candy rack, and standing upright while examining his options. Thibodeau says a customer who was pouring coffee at the time started clapping his hands and shooed the bear out. In other Ursine news, the Katmai Bear Cam is live. It went up June 21st. This is the sixth year that Explore.org is streaming live footage from the popular bear hangouts in Katmai National Park and Preserve. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
People around the world are getting online to watch the bears. In the last week, the bear cams have been averaging 15,000 viewers at any given time. And this summer is already off to an exciting start. That's audio from the webcam this summer that one of the viewers posted on YouTube. The low bellowing you can hear over the static and water noise is bears nicknamed Grazer and Beadnose. They're growling at each other on the bank of the river by Brooks Falls. On his blog, former Katmai Ranger Mark Fitz speculates that the dust-up was motivated by the two mother bears being protective of their cubs. Park Superintendent Mark Sturm says that the response to the webcam has been enthusiastic.
People are really excited and interested in seeing the bears in their natural environment and, you know, providing the whole wide world an opportunity to see the resources that Katmai has and to give them an opportunity to view some of the behaviors that they exhibit has really been a successful collaboration.
The project is a partnership between Explore.org and Katmai National Park and Preserve. A grant to the park from the Annenberg Foundation provides infrastructure for the project. The Annenberg Foundation was founded by the same person who created Explore.org. That grant pays for a seasonal media ranger position, supports educational programs, and funds the webcams themselves. Two camera locations are set up so far this year. The most popular view is the one at Brooks Falls. It alone attracted 22 million views last year. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
And rangers periodically schedule live chats with viewers over the summer. They're taking suggestions from viewers on chat topics for the season. The schedule will be announced on the park's events calendar and social media pages.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
A Veterans Town Hall featuring Dr. Timothy Ballard will take place on July 6th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the National Guard Armory in Fairbanks. The event is open to all. The VA welcomes frank and open discussions of veterans' concerns in all program areas. Time will be made available for individuals to address their concerns in one-on-one sessions. For more information, email samuel.hudson@va.gov. This message sponsored by the VA.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, odd and touching tales. On a rainy Wednesday evening in Ketchikan, locals and seasonal residents gathered at the Arctic Bar to carry on one of the oldest traditions known to humankind, storytelling. KRBD's Emma Atkinson was there and has this report.
Kelly Burke, a teacher at the Tongass School of Arts and Sciences, stepped up to the microphone and shared her story. Burke used to work at the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago. Sitting behind a desk selling tickets, she spent most days people-watching, on the outside looking into people's lives.
So I'm going to tell you today about John and Jackie. So when you look at John and Jackie from a distance, they seem normal.
John was an average 40-something man who pushed his wife around in something resembling a cross between a wheelchair and a stroller. There was something unique about Jackie. As she approached Jackie, Burke noticed how white her skin was. Or was it white? And why didn't Jackie ever seem to move?
Yes, and one of my supervisors told me the story of how a guest came up to her and said, "What's wrong with that woman? Is she a burn victim?" And my supervisor got the greatest pleasure of telling her, "No, that's a mannequin."
Next up was Cameo McRoberts, who had a unique perspective on growing up in Ketchikan. Every day after school, she would wait at the Arctic Bar for her mother to get off work. She and her friend Jessica sat at the bar, hunted for spare quarters, and drank soda.
The bartender, if we were really good, would give us quarters to play Ms. Pac-Man, and on our birthdays, she would give us as many Shirley Temples as we could drink, and we usually threw up. So the first time I ever threw up at the Arctic was when I was 7. And I haven't since, I would like to note.
McRoberts painted a picture of Ketchikan seen through the eyes of a little girl waiting at a bar. Sounds a bit depressing, right? But for McRoberts, everything was fun and new and magical.
One of my jobs after school to earn quarters for the Ms. Pac-Man machine was to dump all of the ice glasses into the well, which was basically an open hole in the ground, in the floor of the bar, that I would dump all the ice cubes down, and on sunny days they would fall down into the water at low tide, and they would just sparkle like stars, and the red straws would just float off into the abyss, and it was beautiful.
It seemed to her that the whole town would come to the Arctic on the 4th of July and gather on the back deck, which would lean forward just a little under the weight of the partygoers. McRoberts acknowledged her struggle with returning to the place where she had sipped Shirley Temples and hunted for quarters.
It's weird growing up in a bar. You don't do that when anymore. And I have a hard time coming to this bar and getting intoxicated. Because this bar is like my childhood.
The next storyteller had signed up at the last minute after much encouragement from her friends. Known to the crowd only as Spice, she seemed nervous as she made her way to the microphone.
But I want to tell the story of a black hole. I love black holes a lot. I get really nerdy about them. My entire back is a tattoo of a black hole, so maybe later it might come out.
Spice continued to geek out about physics and math. She shared some of her other favorites, too.
Favorite fact. Favorite fact of all time. If you were to squish the Earth into the size of Manhattan, black hole. That's it. That's how you say it. That's it.
By this point, the story had devolved into more of a list, but a funny one.
So, all right, black holes, Einstein, Newton, rocket science.
Spice moved on to her final point.
I never really understood this because until I heard it, but like, where is the material of a tree? Where does the material of a tree come from?
People shouted out suggestions. Roots? The dirt?
It's from the air. The material of a tree is from the air that's on the surface of it. And so the wood is made up of, like, light hitting air on the surface of a tree. The material of a tree comes from air.
On her way back to her seat, Spice rolled up her shirt just enough to reveal her tattoo, and there it was. A black and white rendering of a black hole swallowing most of her upper back. For AK, I'm Emma Atkinson.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Adam Fouch of Anchorage.
My
My family moved up here when I was like 6 months old, and right now I'm the only member of my family up here. I'm a student. I went and just got out of active duty Army a couple years ago, came back to Alaska and been a full-time student for 2 years, finished my bachelor's and working on my master's now. Got my bachelor's in history. I want to teach like history at a high school level. People don't necessarily always think about cause and effect or how we got to a certain point, but if you go through enough history and learn it, you can kind of see how we got here, where we might be going, or at least understand the reasoning of how things happen. And I think that's a really good skill to impart to kids. Well, my first deployment to Iraq was definitely interesting. That was 06 and 07, 15 months. And for a lot of that time, my platoon of like 40 guys was, we had a three-story house in the middle of a rundown city. Actually, by the time we left, it was pretty good. And then the Marines took over afterwards, and bad things happened. The Marines weren't very flexible. Alaska, while being beautiful, can be very harsh. People understand that they're still part of, like, the food chain, part of, and they have to go and deal with more than just, like, their little needs. They have to actually, you have to think about survival slightly all the time. People I've noted either tend to want to stay or want to leave. There's not, like, a whole lot of middle ground. Alaska is home. I prefer to stay up here.
Adam Fouch lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emma Atkinson and Henry Leisha. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Robert Hannon and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Trip Krause, Quentin Chandler, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Aaron Bolton in Homer, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. Sean Dugan edited and produced tonight's show. And I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. The University of Alaska Southeast offers the Finnish College Alaska Initiative, designed with flexible online learning options and customized degree programs. It's college that fits life, work, and play schedules while earning a degree. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver for eligible applicants. Apply for the fall semester by Tuesday, August the 1st. Learn more at finnishcollege.alaska.edu. This message is sponsored by UAS.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.